Buckley.
How do you say to your child in the night, nothing's all black, but then nothing's all white? How do you say it will all be all right, when you know that it mightn't be true? What do you do? Care for the things you say, children will listen. Care for the things you do, children will see and learn. Children may not obey, but children will listen. Children will look to you for which way to turn, to learn what to be. Careful before you say, listen to me. Children will listen. Careful the wish you make. Wishes are children. Careful the path they take. Wishes come true, not free. Careful the spell you cast, not just on children. Sometimes the spell may last past what you can see and turn against you. Careful the tale you tell, that is the spell. Children will listen. How can you say to a child who's in flight, don't slip away and I won't hold so tight? What can you say that no matter how slight won't be misunderstood? What do you leave to your child when you're dead? Only whatever you put in its head. Things which your mother and father had left, which was said to them too. Careful what you say. Children will listen. Careful you do it too. Children will see and learn. Guide them, but step away. Children will glisten. Temper with what is true, and children will tell if just to be free. Careful before you say, listen to me. Children will listen. Children will listen. Children will listen.
Wow. Thank you, Adrian. That was beautiful. Beautiful rendition of that song. One of my favorites, by Stephen Sondheim. So, last time I spoke to you was March 15th, 2020. You know, that one time we did the whole service virtually rather than live at Symphony Space. Now, some people said that we might do that for a few weeks or even until June, and a couple of really crazy people predicted it could last until the fall or even Christmas of 2020. Imagine. So 17 months later, here we are. But remind me, where exactly is here? I think we've all lost track. And perhaps more to the point, where am I? You'll know soon enough. But this larger sense of displacement is real. Our lives went into a kind of suspended animation, and our plans got put on hold. Graduations and weddings, gatherings, choir practice, rituals, even funerals canceled. No markers. Home is office and vice versa, not to mention school. It's been an extended worldwide intermission of sorts. All of us hanging out in the lobby, wondering, is it safe to go back in the theater yet? Everywhere on planet Earth, our stories have been interrupted. And we're sort of back to normal, but now not again. Liminality, being between worlds, is our new norm. Like we're beaming down to the planet, but never quite arrive. What is the effect of all of this metaphysically? It's a lot to unpack. First, let me introduce some concepts that I think will be helpful. Job 22:28 famously says, "You shall declare a thing, and it shall be so." Unity's third principle says, "We create our life experience through the activity of our thoughts, feelings, and beliefs." When we think and declare over time, we create something uniquely human, the story. Now, we love stories, especially the ones in our heads. They help us shape reality into something cohesive. Individually, we assemble the story of our lives. We assign other people their roles, and we go about telling our story to ourselves and others over and over until it's so well rehearsed that perhaps we leave little room for alteration or improvisation, which is totally fine as long as nothing and no one ever veers from our script. And if it does, we say things like, "That shouldn't have happened. Why? It's not in the story." In groups, we create and tell stories about who we are in opposition to them, the other. And we agree on who is more important or even better. What are little boys and little girls made of? There was a great article in the Times recently by Ruth Whipman. She compared the stories that little girls grow up with, often filled with relationships and negotiations, learning to deal with emotions, as opposed to the stories boys grow up with, which typically lack human beings entirely in favor of talking tractors, dinosaurs, and superheroes, and which, importantly, focus on dominance and often violent conclusions. This definitely affects how we see gender and ourselves. Historically, we've left large groups out of our stories entirely. People of color, gay people, women over 30. All of this reinforces our collective bias, which we make up. We put it in books and movies and conversations until it's just something in the background, like an operating system in a computer with a bug we don't realize is sapping our energy. Stories have a cost to us individually and as a culture. We fight for our personal stories, and as we're seeing, we fight over our national story. I think the unrest we're seeing now is in part due to our stories being halted, changed, turned into something else entirely on a massive scale. There just seems to be so much uncertainty. But maybe intermission is the perfect time to take stock of our stories and storytelling. So, I think we love stories because they make order out of chaos and give us meaning, a way to feel connected to something again, because our spiritual dilemma is feeling cut off from God or the universe, alone. With a cohesive narrative, my life has purpose, value, amounts to something, I belong. Take that away or threaten it and watch out. Remember, even a victim story can be an identity, can give people purpose by always having an enemy. Now, I'm talking a lot about some of the potential pitfalls, but let me be clear. Storytelling is a wonderful human capacity to create events and create meaning, affect change and growth, the power of imagination. We are, after all, made in the likeness of God. We create realities, worlds. But so often we've had these background stories, the ones we don't know we're running. It's important to bring these into our awareness, then recreate our narratives consciously, because our stories have real impact. As we just heard in Adrian's beautiful rendition of that song by Stephen Sondheim, careful the spell you cast, not just on children. Sometimes the spell may last past what you can see and turn against you. Careful the tale you tell, that is the spell. We are authors, and we have authority where? The inner world, which we can make into a hell or a heaven, right? I call this spiritual authority. Now, it's not easy to create consciously because so much of our story does in fact run on autopilot. Individually, many people are stuck in the dead zone, as Carlos put it. 9 to 5, same old, but hey, it works well enough, and it feels safer than change. After all, better the devil you know. So we settle, punch in, punch out, repeat. Or, very often, we live in stories other people have written for us, whether it's society or our parents, or we ask others to live in our story. Ever do that in a relationship? When we do this, we violate a person's spiritual authority, their free will. There's a great documentary right now on Netflix called Pray It Away about the so-called gay conversion movement, where they want gay people to fit into the notion of a traditional family with really deep and sad consequences. On a societal level, freezing our story in the past or some mythological era often benefits some people and costs many. If we don't change our perspective and broaden what's possible, we stay stuck. To wake up from a stagnant story or get out of living in someone else's, we might have to question our inner reality and perhaps experience some pain in order to grow. Think about therapy. There may be some crying. Some people might not like it when we change our story. It might challenge their story about you or even about themselves. So, there might be some pain, as there is in giving birth or so-called growing pains. But don't let the presence of pain convince you that this story I'm trying out is wrong, that it's the universe telling me to stop. Now, this principle about perhaps having pain is true on a societal level too. For example, author Resmaa Menakem says that dismantling racism, dismantling this false narrative of white people as better or somehow the norm, requires walking through our discomfort and processing our pain in a clean way, not throwing it onto others, but owning and transforming the pain, the trauma, ourselves. We've been doing some of that work in the quest. Not always easy, but it's healing, transformative work. Growth requires that we question our stories, or at least stay open to their being questioned. Consider that Einstein did that. Gandhi and Martin Luther King did that. Jesus, the Buddha, Muhammad, each of them tapped into something way bigger than themselves and changed the stories of India, the United States, the world, and the nature of space and time. Big stories. Because they saw beyond the current paradigm. And whatever thought structure we're in, we can see beyond it too. We can shift our stories. How, you ask? Well, thank you for asking. Perhaps you've heard that we have to work with and be grateful for the job or home we have before we can shift. With our story, we work with the elements given, which are facts. And we find new meaning and even gratitude for them without forcing it. We don't get to change the facts of the past, and we're not trying to manipulate the future to some better place. But as we reframe our experience, reinterpreting the meaning, events may shift moving forward in surprising ways to match the new structure of our story, our new perspective, which I think is really cool. Consider this analogy, if you will. Our story is a consciousness infrastructure that we can rebuild. No bipartisan deal required. But similar to Congress, we may need to talk to parts of ourselves that don't want to sign on to the new story, the new infrastructure underlying our lives. Now, in Congress, sometimes they yell at the members who don't agree, who won't sign on to the New Deal. How's that working out? With ourselves, kindness is vital, especially to our disowned parts. There's a reason that part of you is scared or resisting change. When you yell at that part, it hides and gets more scared. Those parts are like children. Careful the things you say, children will listen. So, let's give ourselves love. Talk to ourselves kindly, especially to those parts that are throwing a tantrum inside of us, acting out in some way because we're trying to change. We can journal, we can dialogue with them to be curious rather than judgmental. We may want to give them a fixed amount of time to create boundaries, but I encourage you not to banish those parts of you. The banished parts often end up writing our stories, or at least editing them. If we learn to love those enemy parts of ourselves and of our society, we bring them into dialogue and heal the shadow, moving toward unity within ourselves and our world. we exercise spiritual authority when we become conscious of the story, when we see the parts that come from our shadow or that we're copying from others, from our culture, from our entire era, and we take responsibility for it. Then we're not in reaction to life, we're in response from our place of choice, creativity, which is our divine birthright, our power. However, discovering our assumptions, the fictions behind our stories, is really hard. We often have a kind of blindness around our own assumptions. For example, I assumed I could never own a house, so it wasn't even on my radar. And I had many reasons. Here are the top three. I'm too old. I have a job that works for me, which requires me to be in New York City. And number three, I can't afford the down payment. These assumptions edited out that possibility from my story. It was pre-rejected. But then a few things happened. My partner, Joseph, was eager for us to own a house, and of course, I resisted, telling him those same top three reasons why not. He checked with a financial advisor to see if one really could be too old for mortgage, and he was informed that no, banks get the house if you don't make it to the end, so any age is welcome. Huh. Well, yeah, but I have to work in New York. I've got this job and... All right, during COVID, turns out I could work from home just fine. And when I asked my boss if that could continue indefinitely, he said, sure, from anywhere. So that's two down. But here's the big one, number three. What about the down payment? So it turns out you can take funds from your own 401k without penalty if it's for a house. And the banks don't look on this as a loan you're taking out, because it's actually your own money. Looking together at our finances, the amount we were short was precisely what the 401k was willing to provide. So now, just maybe, this was possible. So we looked, landing on Beacon as the place. But every available house, when you called, they said, oh no, we just sold that. And then people told us, oh, it's really not a good time to be looking with these crazy bidding wars. No. So we tried to stay positive. After all, they might be wrong. What are we missing? Well, it occurred to us that Beacon was the kind of place we wanted, but maybe we could broaden the parameters of our dream and not be so literal. So we looked just north in Wappingers Falls, and we saw a stunning house that was exactly in our price range. Surely, we thought when we visited, it would not match our expectations, which was true. It far exceeded them. Walking in, seeing the view and the location in the heart of town and the details, one thing was clear. This was home. And so this story of myself as a New York City guy was maybe going to change. We were going to change it, right? Well, we made an offer, and to our delight, they accepted, so we celebrated. We told our families, shared pictures, and then Monday came and they said, oh, we've accepted a higher cash offer. Thanks anyway. Now, we didn't know that was a thing, but we counter-offered. They turned us down. And everyone said, yeah, that happens. Now, I was right back in my old story. I can't own a house. See? People with cash get it. The market's too hot. And how can we compete with these Wall Street types? Which is something I made up. Joseph and I got really depressed. In fact, the depression informed us that this house was in fact important to us, really important. We saw a life there that no other place inspired. But I assumed we were at the end, that if there was any way to get the house, our real estate agent would have told us. He's the expert. And he's getting a commission, so surely he would have told us if there were any hope. But then I did something. I did something crucial. I doubted my own negative thought. I allowed just a touch of what if. I woke at 6 a.m. and spoke with Joseph. We realized that we could up our offer just a bit. So we texted our real estate agent, asking him to make another higher offer. We included a beautiful letter about who we were and how our values lined up with the seller. And the offer was accepted. Now, by this point, we knew that meant absolutely nothing until we had a signed contract. So, the attorneys went to work. We did our part and waited for that signature. And waited. The lawyer said, "I've never seen anything like this. But don't worry, it's coming tomorrow." "Nope." "All right, Tuesday." "Nope." So for 11 excruciating days, we waited, during which all my doubts screamed, "This story is over. Shut it down." But it wasn't. The contract came back with a signature. Then, after more hoop jumping than a rhythmic gymnast, insane paperwork, and frankly, way too much learning, we closed on our dream house on August 10th, 6 years to the day since Joseph and I first met. And that's where I am right now. It's ours. Now, please be reassured, I'm not that far from New York and I plan to come in on Sundays when that's necessary again. I want to say a special thank you to everyone out there watching at Unity of New York, because think about it, this is the place where we can workshop our stories, edit out parts, share it in a room and see what isn't working anymore, what we might want to shift. Now, I'm not guaranteeing a house if you follow these steps, because each of us has an organic spiritual path. But there are some principles here that I hope will assist you in a practical way. This is the school of practical Christianity. First, I allowed possibility to take place. If I had shut it down and given up, I would have been the one declaring that this house was impossible. One key, I think, is staying open to God's input, our co-author. If we have it all neatly and perfectly written, it has to be in Beacon, then where's the delight, the surprise? Are we always narrating without stop? No silence for our collaborator to chime in? I've had collaborators like that. It's not fun. When I trust God, the universe, spirit, is good with a capital G, I stay open to that collaboration and to possibility more easily. Our dream boards and affirmations get our minds going and moving in a direction, but are not literal demands like ordering from Amazon. In my experience, I say what I like and want, and God surprises me with something that riffs on that and takes it further, adds an element I didn't expect. Like I was never gonna get a dog, and then I did, and I loved it. Met Joseph, that was a surprise, becoming a minister, getting a house. And of course, there may be times when it looks like nothing's going on, but perhaps things are shifting in the background, behind the curtain. And I can keep moving with a degree of faith that my story is in good hands. Sometimes I think it's helpful to stop narrating the story, to consciously go to a more quiet state. Allow that higher energy to come in rather than filling any space in our lives with chatter. To take the pregnant pause. On an individual level, this is letting God in, that still small voice that can work miracles. On an interpersonal level, this can be revolutionary, what I call high quality non-reaction. Like in our relationships, when we disagree and we're stuck in our way of thinking, ready to react rather than respond, we can pause. Breathe. Open up to a bigger story that is beyond our own viewpoints. Our stories shift when we pause and wait, when we open up to this bigger energy, this place of allness, of possibility. So please remember, you are a powerful author, creating the experience of your life. Writing requires some editing. Sometimes a great song no longer fits the musical. Sometimes we can reevaluate and reassess, even recast. As the song says, witches can be right, giants can be good. You decide what's right. You decide what's good. Mistakes are just how we learn, not proof of some failure. And after all, there's plenty of film in the camera, so if you make a mistake, do another take. It's your movie, your story. As far as mine is concerned, now you know where it takes place, and that it has a happy ending or a happy beginning. It all depends on the story we're telling. Because you have spiritual authority too, as much as any king or queen, and a very well-connected collaborator, eager to help you, here and now, always. Yes, that's right. God is in the house. See what I did there? Thank you.
Let's now enter in to that space of infinite possibility, that pregnant pause. Let's meditate. I invite you to put everything aside. If you have anything in your lap, anything in your hands, just put it aside. You can pick it back up shortly. Take in a deep, deep breath, releasing everything into this moment. Breathing in God. And breathing out possibility. We know that life is lived from the inside out. We know that our words have tremendous power. They set into action a power that shapes our lives. In this realization that my words are powerful instruments, I consciously speak positive words. I fill my life and my world with shining words of love and happiness, gentle words of peace and goodwill, vital words of health and strength, rich words of success and prosperity, inspirational words of forgiveness and faith, blessed words of comfort and joy. I listen to my own words. I know that words of praise and reassurance can work wonders. My words are an outreach of God's Spirit within me. The inner working of Spirit helps me to accept only positive words of truth. Spirit guides me in selecting and speaking words of upliftment and encouragement. Job said, "Thou shalt also decree a thing, and it shall be established unto thee." As we continue breathing deeper and slower, we create space, room, in our heart. We listen for the divine words that are ours. In the silence.
You.
every failure, God, you'll have every victory.